Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to those of you who have come to realize that the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are corrupt and that they have become counterproductive. I am Yada. Our number for you to join us at any time over the next 2 hours is 877-300-7645. Reuters is reporting something that I have been saying now for many years. Now, Reuters isn't saying it because somebody at Reuters has actually examined the world as it is, thought about cause and effect, and then come to a cogent conclusion regarding the evidence. No, they're simply reporting what Russia has said most recently. And even in doing so, they can't get the story right, nor perspective. The article reads, top Russian officials accused the United States on Thursday of seeking political and military dominance in the world. That's a statement of fact. They're accusing America based upon the only conclusion that can be drawn from the evidence. And they sought to put the blame on the West for international security crises, including the conflict in East Ukraine. Well, that's this idea they sought to. The fact is, the United States is responsible, solely and completely, for the civil war in the Ukraine. America started it when it encouraged, came to support vocally, probably also with arms, the thugs that burned major parts of the Ukraine, and under threat of death, violence, arson, forced the popularly elected government out of the Ukraine so they could take over the country. America is on record saying exactly that, the State Department encouraging these thugs. Have the hell with democracy if you can go fight the Cold War again. Now, it's interesting that this article says, evoking Cold War-style rhetoric. That's not Cold War-style rhetoric. What the United States is doing is continuing to fight now, trying to re-energize a war that was the last war America claimed to have won, although it was a war that both sides clearly lost, both sides bankrupting the other. But in this particular situation, the Obama administration and its NATO cronies decided that Russia's solution to the Ukraine's bankruptcy and failure as a state could be resolved if they bankrupt America and continued to loan the Ukraine tens of billions of dollars, many, many tens of billions of dollars of American money, American productive taxpayers' money, and that they could seal the Ukraine for NATO and require Russia to defend what is right now a border without walls, a undefended border with Ukraine. And so that was the intent. And as is the case in Washington, the folks in Washington realize that perception is reality in politics. Reality is not reality. Perception is reality. So they created the perception that Russia was trying to intervene in the Ukrainian political scene by offering the Ukrainians $15 billion to keep the state viable. Now, then the United States did exactly that, offered them not $15 billion, but $25 billion, and became a bidding war. But the difference was the Russians had a means of getting their money back because of the Ukraine's dependence upon their gas and oil and because of the pipeline that runs through the Ukraine. But the United States didn't. The United States, it was just this global chess game of world dominance, still trying to fight a war that both sides lost in the Cold War. And since that time, the United States has been to the Ukraine with joint NATO military missions. They've sent the CIA chief, the NATO chief. They've sent weapons. They've sent billions upon billions of dollars that have been used to fund the military. They've sent all manner of spying intel. And they have encouraged the Ukrainians to do what the Ukrainians do best, which is to be uncivilized. I don't say that to be pejorative. The fact of the matter is that the two most deadly events of the Holocaust were both perpetrated by Ukrainians. This is a savage people. And they instigated the civil war. The Crimea voted 99% to be part of Russia. They didn't want to be part of a gang of goons that took over Kiev. They wanted to be part of Russia. And they voted as such. Oh, but that was Russia being bad, according to the United States. How is that the case? It was the United States that caused the division. People of Crimea says, we don't want to be part of anything that has to do with the United States. We want to be part of Russia. Go away. They did the same thing in Donetsk and Luhansk. But you see, America isn't the land of the free. This isn't about liberty. If a state wants to separate, if a people want to disassociate, that's not allowed. When Americans tried to do it, Lincoln managed to fight a war that caused 650,000 Americans to die. We don't believe in liberty. Not really. And so when the people voted for their independence, America didn't recognize it and encouraged the Ukrainians to go fight a war. Tens of thousands of people have now died in that war. Russia's credibility has been besmirched by a lying American government. And when the Ukrainians, or when the Russians tell the truth that all of this is the fault of America trying for world dominance as it invades and bombs country after country, arms country after country, from being the primary supporter now of the military junta in Egypt, bombing Libya, turning it into Grand Central for Mujahideen and jihadists, making a mess of Somalia with our invasion there, our bombing of Pakistan and Yemen with drones has put one of those countries into civil war and the other on the cusp. Our armaments to Saudi Arabia have caused them to invade and bomb Yemen. We turned Syria into a hell zone of civil war where hundreds of thousands of people have died because of our stupid, ill-fated, counterproductive invasion of Iraq, giving Iraq to Iran, changing the balance of power between Sunni and Shia. Iraq is now in a hellish civil war, all because the United States thought it was our job to make them like us. No matter where you turn, we are making a mess of the world because the United States is seeking to impose its will. Not just its will on the rest of the world, but its will on American citizens. That's why the NSA has been authorized against the U.S. Constitution to spy on Americans. That's why there is a Department of Homeland Security. You know, the U.S. military, the largest in the world, larger than the rest of the world combined, was supposed to be tasked with the mission of protecting America. But now we have another military unit, this one inside of America, called Homeland Security. The American government wants to control everyone, including Americans. The Patriot Act was all about one thing, limiting your freedom and changing the balance of power dramatically from the people to the government. And the Soviet Union and its defense minister have said as such. So according to this, invoking Cold War-style rhetoric, Russian defense minister said that a drive by the United States and its allies to bring Kiev closer to the West was a threat to Moscow, which had forced it to react. That's exactly what it was intended to do. The United States and its allies have crossed all possible lines in their drive to bring Kiev into their orbit. That would not have failed, that could not have failed to trigger our reaction, he told an annual security conference in Moscow. Echoing his comments, the General Chief of Staff of the Russian Armed Forces told the meeting, considering themselves the winners of the Cold War, the United States decided to reshape the world to fit its needs. Aiming at complete dominance, Washington stopped taking into account the interests of other countries and respect for international law, end quote. Every bit of that's true. Now, if you're amongst the thoughtless individuals who have been indoctrinated to think Russia bad, America good, and you think that this is an upside-down view of the world, I strongly encourage you to look at the evidence, the consequence of American belligerence in Korea, in Vietnam, in Grenada, in Panama, in Nicaragua, in Mexico with our drug war, in Libya, in Egypt, in the Sudan, in Somalia, in Yemen, in Saudi Arabia, in Iraq, in Iran, in the Ukraine. Look at what we have done. And you tell me who's the belligerent. Why don't you look at what Russia has done, besides securing its pipeline in a former part of its country, the Georgian Republic, and supporting in some manner, non-militarily, the Russians in Donetsk and Luhansk against their military assault by the Kiev regime. What has Russia done in the last decade or so? This has been a one-sided affair, with America being the belligerent party. Russia said, it is clear that measures taken by NATO to strengthen the bloc and to increase its military capacity are far from being defensive. America hasn't used its military in a defensive manner in a very, very long time. It would be difficult to ascribe anything to the U.S. military that could be considered defensive for more than a century. Russia was not prepared to invade. The United States would have no interest and no capability of doing so. So everything we did in the Cold War wasn't defensive. America had no interest in Vietnam. We were not defending Americans in Vietnam. We weren't defending America in Korea. We were not defending America in Panama or Grenada, for crying out loud. We were not defending America in Iraq or Afghanistan. The Iraqis and the Afghanis had never invaded America. They had no capacity to invade America. They were not going to invade and occupy America. It is a complete and utter myth that America's military is for defensive purposes. The Germans had no means to invade America. They didn't have any means to attack America. The Japanese, the furthest they could get was the American fleet in Hawaii, and only got that because we were stupid. And then they retreated. They had no intent of invading America. We didn't fight that war to defend America against invasion. They only attacked Pearl Harbor because they didn't want us to interfere with what they were doing. And what they were doing was evil. But don't think for a moment that we fought that war to defend America from invasion and being occupied.
It's like we forget that we have these two things on both sides of us, these great masses of water. And with modern day like technology and stuff, we know what's coming long before it's here.
And you tell me, what country has a flotilla and a military, an ability to project a military and to deliver a military, that even if we had no submarines, we had no aircraft carriers, we had no national defense capabilities, we were blind as a bat. You tell me which country could mount an assault on America that has the ability to do so, to invade the United States. You tell me.
None in the world.
None. I mean, none even if we were to shut down the U.S. military. And if Russia and China were to say, you know, this economic prosperity thing, it's not what it's cracked up to be. What we'd really rather do is let's bankrupt our country and let's invest every spare dime on projecting a force so that we can invade and occupy America. What would it take? 50 years? And why would they do it? And so this whole idea that we're defending America from something is just utter nonsense. You know, do you think that we defended America and that the trench warfare that was taking place in Europe where they moved 3 feet a day, that they were going to move 3 feet a day across the ocean and that one day that trench was going to be in Trenton? I mean, come on. Do you think the Spanish-American War had anything to do with American defense? How about the Mexican-American War? How about the Civil War? How about the American Indian Wars, where we just coveted their land?
You mean
America's never
fought
a war for our defense. Even in 1812, the one battle the military engaged in, it turned tail and ran, and the British torched Washington. What were you going to say, Scott?
I was going to say that we liberated the land when we got here, right?
Oh yeah, from the people that we stole it from.
We that's what we use our military for, though, Craig. Yeah. It's all peace.
All peace, yeah.
Peace through war, man.
Well, yeah, man. I've heard the commercials. The U.S. Navy, a force for good. And by the way, 90% of the commercial shows the weapon systems, and it shows that force for good, you know, armed to the teeth, and as combatants. Hey, you want to talk about force for good? It's just amazing. There's the Pacquiao-Mayweather fight that's coming up. I'm not a boxing fan, so it really doesn't mean anything to me. But Pacquiao was quoted. Pacquiao is he's a Filipino. He has gotten involved in politics now. He said that the Lord told him that he's going to hand Mayweather put Mayweather under his control. So the Lord has already spoken in this fight. And the Lord has told Pacquiao that he is going to put Mayweather under Pacquiao's control. We'll talk about it in a moment. Well, Scott, do you think that the Lord is going to hand Mayweather over to Pacquiao?
No.
Under the control. Oh, no, we know that the Lord likes the control. Well, that's what lords do, after all, right?
Definitely.
Yeah, except, of course, the Lord is Satan. And I really don't think Satan has a favorite in the fight. I mean, but he likes fights. There's no question about that. Wants people to beat each other up, loves men to engage in fighting one another. But I'm not sure he has a favorite here.
Definitely not.
You do know him personally, this Lord, so that you would know whether or not he has a favorite. He might have a favorite. I mean, isn't Mayweather, didn't Mayweather get accused of spousal battery?
Yep.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, he would like that, I think, probably.
You know, I don't think... Yeah, I don't think he has a favorite in it. I don't think he cares. I think
Pacquiao's really religious, obviously, so, you know, and he's political. So, I mean, the Lord's got to love that stuff.
Well, I'm sure he does, but that stuff is, you know, that's already there. So he's got that all planned. Whether one guy believes or not, it doesn't matter.
So just like Tim Tebow is the Lord's quarterback, Pacquiao could be the Lord's boxer.
Well, maybe. And it's not like Floyd Mayweather's not really...
I wonder if God gets the DirecTV package where you pay-per-view.
Well, he's got a $99 just like the rest of us. No, it's actually something that always amazes me. I like the... athletes are always so confident, and they're very confident, usually very confident people when you get to the higher levels. And to see them, like, all of a sudden, immediately, like, lose that sense of, you know, I'm good because of all the training I went through and everything like that, to all of a sudden becoming, well, I can do this because some mystical being gave me my powers.
Hey, how about this? Jordan Spieth, you know, he wins the Masters. Now, to his credit, at least I did not hear Jordan Spieth waxing poetic about his religious faith. He didn't do a Bubba Watson. But his dad was asked about him, and, you know, his dad sounded like an okay guy until he talked about how God had given his son, Jordan Spieth, who won the Masters, God-given talent. So would that mean that God is up there and saying, all right, you, I'm going to give you great hand-high coordination, and you over there, I'm going to make you a spaz.
You're going to be
I'm going to make really pretty, and I'm going to make you really ugly. I'm going to make you really smart, and I'm going to make you really dumb.
And you're going to be a rock.
Can you imagine a God so ridiculous that he's choosing to give some people ability and others disability? But that's the religious God. Oh, but God gave me this disability so that I could learn patience.
Yeah.
God gave me this talent, and I need to honor him with this talent that he gave me. Yeah, I'm sure that, you know, the big scheme of things, I read the Torah. I love Augusta. I would love to go play Augusta. I'm looking for you, with all your media connections, to invite me to go play Augusta. I'm holding my breath over here for you to invite me to play. And I'm sure that even God would love to play Augusta National. But, yeah. I've read the Torah. I didn't see anything about Augusta National, golf, or the Masters mentioned anywhere in the Torah.
Do you really think that he would want to, though? You're talking about somebody that sees stars and goes to galaxies and creates things.
Oh, but golf is a great game. And Augusta is a walk in the park. I'm going to ask him. Maybe since if you're not going to let me play there, I'll ask before the earth gets toast. Maybe we can go play around.
Think about how ridiculous these people are being, though. God gave me these talents.
Oh, it's just a joke.
And you know, you can. I guess if you break it down far enough, sure. I mean, he created DNA, and technically he gave you a soul, and you're here because of that. But I mean, I could be the greatest pool player in the world, and I don't play pool, so I'll never know.
You may have that God-given talent, but you've never exercised it.
I might be an artist on the level of Kirk, but I'll never know because I look at my stick figures and I think, you know what, those aren't very good. I don't like doing that. I don't want to do that.
that's my view, too. I'm not very good at it, so I just don't pursue it. A thought occurred to me. Okay, what fun would it be to play golf in eternity when you're perfect? You know, is every drive going to be 350 yards down the middle of the fairway, and every shot, every approach shot in the hole? Every par three is a hole in one if everything is perfect. But I thought, you know, we ought to be able to transition from energy, spirit, to matter, to material, just as Yosha did. And Yosha was able to manifest imperfections in his transformation. For example, he showed Thomas the holes in his hand. He didn't, when he was there having dinner and walking with the two fellows on the road to Emmaus, and when he was mistaken as the gardener with the women early on Bakutam. He didn't have holes in his hands and feet. He wasn't bleeding. He didn't still have scars from the crown of thorns. But he was capable of imperfections. And wouldn't it be kind of fun if when we transition some of our spiritual energy into matter to enjoy, say, a fire and a sing-along and a hike and a camp out on some, gorgeous place out there in the universe, that we could materialize, kind of as we are now with imperfections, so that, there's a little bit of effort, a little bit of a struggle in the process, which makes the whole adventure fun. What do you think?
Yeah, that sounds cool. But you're wrong on par threes. There's no longer any par threes. They're all par ones.
And, and we'll play, we'll play one-on-one basketball. And in my flawed state, I'll be 6'5", so that, I'll dunk right over you.
Well, good luck to you, I guess.
Yeah, good luck. So, you told me you heard a news story, I guess it was yesterday.
Yeah.
That the United States achieved something that had never been achieved previously. And you've kept it in abeyance. You haven't told me what it is. But So what is it that we achieved that is unique to us? Yay, us.
Well, I don't know if it's the first. It's definitely unique to this week was the first time ever that American spending on dining out just overtook grocery sales for the first time ever. We are spending more money in bars and restaurants than we are spending in grocery stores.
Yeah, that's, I'm surprised that it took this long. Some of the things that I've noticed as I've traveled and we look around. My wife and I typically, when we're... we will typically, even when it's just the two of us, prepare 3 out of 4 meals at home and go out 1 out of 4 meals. And when our boys were both home, it was more along the range of we would of the 21 meals during a week, we would typically eat 20 of the 21 at home. And my wife is a wonderful cook. Both of my boys have learned to be really outstanding cooks, and really skilled at the craft of cooking. And my wife is just a natural at it. And we enjoy it. I am Chef de Barbecue is my contribution. And we buy fresh produce and fresh ingredients, and we cook. It's part of the family process. But, I think that people like being served. They don't like cooking anymore. When we were looking at a home in the Central California coast, we found that most homes, if they had a kitchen, it wasn't functional. And when we relocated our youngest son to Waco, Texas, for the purpose of completing his PhD, what we found is that the number of chain restaurants exceeded anything in the community. There were by far more chain restaurants, predictable, average, just chains, McDonald's, that kind of stuff, Burger King, Taco Bell, and that they were all packed every night, every lunch. Every spot in the parking lot was taken. In fact, these people would flock to Whataburger, and you can't even eat a Whataburger without your stomach just going, "Oh my God, why am I doing this to myself?"
They say that it's the millennials viewing dining out as a social event, and they tend to favor fast food, deli food, pizza restaurants over coffee shops, high-end dining, and casual dining.
So you want to tell me that fixing a meal at home with your family is not a social interaction or event?
They don't view it that way, I guess.
They just want to be served. And it's a lost art. Cooking is a lost art.
Yeah.
It just displays. That's our attitude, It's we don't want to invest the time to learn. We don't want to invest the effort to do. So we just don't. Hey, we're both friends of Larry. Larry sent me an email late yesterday. And Larry is pretty coy these days. He just said, you may want to look at the Hebrew word for work. First time it's used is in Genesis. Remember I told you the other day that we were talking with Kirk, and I said, you know, I think when Yahweh told Adam that he's going to have to toil and that he was going to have to work for on behalf of himself and his family to support his family, and that really is was indicative of us having to engage and participate in the covenant for it to be meaningful and for us to particularly contribute to feed and comfort and shelter and benefit our families, for us to have a sense of value in our families. You know, for the family to work and for us to get a sense of satisfaction out of contributing, for us to understand what Yahweh did and why he cares for his family, we're going to work. So I said, why don't you look at the word for work? And when we return after the break, I will share the three letters that comprise the Hebrew word for work. And we'll see that maybe it's an okay thing to fix a meal at home on behalf of your family. Maybe it's okay that we make sacrifices and that we engage and make contributions on behalf of our family. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We have Kirk on the line, and Kirk is our expert artist. So Kirk is going to be able to tell us what this word means. The word for the Hebrew word for work was first used in Bereshith, Genesis 14:4. And it's a fairly a simple statement. It says, 12 years they will serve Kedolomer. And then the word serve in English is actually the word for work, which is kind of interesting. You'll serve your family. You know, Kedor Lamor is how it's being transliterated into English. He was a king of Elam. Do you know what his name means?
I didn't look that up, but no. So.
Yeah, it's a servant of the of a
people.
No, a servant of a goddess. She was the chief goddess of Elam.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so his name means service of, and then the goddess's name. I'm having the goddess's name is Lagomer. And the name means no mercy.
Oh, wow.
Wow. That, I think it's just hilarious. So they had to serve, yeah, for 12 years they had to serve a goddess whose name is no mercy. The pagan goddess was the antithesis of Yahweh. It's always fun when you look at what the names mean. Mm-hmm. So the Hebrew word for work, and it's transliterated in a number of different ways. It's the three letters are Ain, Abiet, Delet.
Right.
Abad is the way that it is usually transliterated is Abad. Uh-huh. And it's, as I say, it's the primary Hebrew word to serve, to toil, to work, to engage. I find that when it's translated engage in or act upon Abad, that it's properly rendered. So engage in, act upon. Now, can you tell us what Ain, Beth, Delet convey?
Well, the most obvious thing you look at it is either we are looking at the family home and the entranceway to it, because you got,
yes.
Or God is looking at the family home, overlooking the family home and the people who go through it.
The Ain is an eye. Yeah, the Ain is an eye. So it's the perspective. It's mm-hmm. proper perspective, so that you can visualize and understand, and then you've got the doorway, to the family home.
Family home, yeah.
So this is the perspective to understand the doorway in the family home. Yesterday, you have that job. Yesterday, I suggested that the whole concept of work, when Yahweh told Adam that he was going to toil, that he was going to work on behalf of his family, to feed his family, that whole concept seemed to suggest that when we engage and we do things, when we participate, when we contribute to and serve our family, we come to appreciate it. We come to be satisfied by the results of those things. We get a sense of family, of what it means to do things together. And that I thought that work was probably a way for us to have a perspective on Yah's view of his covenant family. I didn't know at the time that, hadn't thought about the time, that the letters that comprise this work, to serve, to work, to engage in, to act upon, are perspective.
Yeah.
To understand the doorway to the covenant family.
Sounds nothing like what we think of when we say work. We think of toil and the negative side of it, the, labor bondage.
Yeah, but, but isn't it true that work is satisfying? That work gives you a sense of, I mean, we were talking yesterday about people becoming dependent on government and on handouts. And in this case, it was people preferring to be served and have somebody else make their food as opposed to them having to make their food.
There's two sides of it. I mean, two things that, anyway, well, we wait till the commercial and come on back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree that, that work, there's a positive aspect of work. It builds character. Builds backbone. It causes us to be willing to do something expecting a positive result or return. It's a quid pro quo associated with work.